We found that the character for the Episcopos, that is the leading elder, the managing elder. He's the manager of the of elders. He's the leading one over a certain area. It's often translated bishop, but it's really the supervising elder. That he has to be, the number one characteristic for him, we're going to summarize what we thought, is that he has to be completely irreproachable. He cannot have anything that he can be attacked with criticism from the outside, as he often represents the church, okay? His position represents the church that people, God's people, are attending. And it would be terrible if you could point out that he was a thief, he was a liar, he was an adulterer, he was a child molester, he was, any of those things. He would just be, it would just be terrible. Okay, he has to be irreproachable. He cannot be laid hold on and have something accusing him. Then we found he had to be the husband of one wife, meaning he could not have multiple wives, which was allowed back in Paul's time. There was nothing against that because the Old Testament allowed it. But Paul did not want a person with multiple wives. Didn't mean he had to be married, because Paul wasn't married himself. Then we thought he had to be temperate, which meant he was moderate in his lifestyle. He was self-controlled. He was a person who was, you know, careful with his drinking, careful with his eating. He was not, you know, a glutton. He was not a wine bibber and all that. Okay. He had to be sensible. He had to be respectable. And that Greek word was kosmos, K-O-S, kosmios, rather, K-O-S-M-I-O-S. He meant he had to be orderly. He had to have qualities that when you saw this person, you said, wow, he's such an honorable, high principled person, that you have high regard for that person, that you'd like to be like that person. Okay, he had to be hospitable. He was open and generous to people who visited with him, and so on. Then he had to be a person who was able to teach. All right, now we've come to this part. He had to be hospitable. Now we come to where we did not preach from last time. This phrase, didaktikos, he had to be, it's called didaktikos. Didaktikos is the right word. D-I-D-A-K-T-I-K-O-S, didaktikos, which means he was skillful. That's the one thing that separates the episcopos from the regular minister or elder. And that is, he had to be able to teach. He's skillful in his teaching. The same word is used in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 22 through 24. Let me read that from 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 22 through 24. Flee also youthful lusts, Paul wrote to Timothy, but follow righteousness. Get away from youthful lusts, but follow righteousness, faith, charity, peace with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart. But verse 23, but foolish and unlearned questions avoid, knowing that they gender strife. Foolish and stupid questions, unlearned. They're made, but they're not useful. And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men and able to teach. Okay, there it is. Didaktos. Okay, he has to be able to teach, and patient. He has to be patient in his teaching. Okay, that's the next one. He has to be able to teach because he has to be able to confront people who, you know, try to bring in false doctrines. Okay. Now, the next one is not addicted to wine. That means par oinos. You can't be loving wine, addicted. You know, the Bible says in the Old Testament, Proverbs, he that loves wine and oil will be a poor man. He that loves pleasure will not be rich. You know, he that loves pleasure, I think it goes this way. He that loves pleasure will be a poor man. He that loves wine and oil, you love it. I'm going to spend money on good food and good drink. That's what it is. Wine and oil, and symbol for good food and good drink. You will not be rich if you love it. If that's what you want to do, go to a restaurant. I know people who made good money, and they just couldn't control their money. They were out spending money all the time on good food and good drinks, and just an enormous amount of their budget went to restaurants and eating out. It's a lot, and you could be very foolish in spending too much money on that. So, not addicted to wine. In other words, a person who is given to drinking too much wine. That's what that Greek word means. Addicted to wine or drunkenness. All right. You have the same statement in Titus chapter 1. I'm going to read from verses 7 through 11. Titus 1. For the overseer, that's the episkopos again. He's the overseer, he's the manager. For the overseer must be above reproach as God's steward. Not self-willed, not quick-tempered, I'm reading from the New American Standard Version, not addicted to wine, not parsimos, he's not addicted to wine, not pugnacious, not fond of sordid gain, but hospitable, loving what is good, sensible, just, devout, self-controlled. Listen to this. I mean, list of wonderful character traits, which every church member should have. It's not just he, but every church member should have. Holding fast the faithful word, which is in accordance with the teaching, so that he will be able, here it is, he will be able both to exhort in sound teaching, sound doctrine. The word doctrine means teaching, and to refute those who contradict. That's why he's got to be skillful at teaching. And there's a way in which you have an argument, if you have the ability to formulate an argument against that argument and overcome it through skillful teaching. For there are many rebellious men, empty talkers, deceivers, especially those of the circumcision. Paul had more trouble from Jews, his countrymen, his fellow Jews, than any other. He went to the Gentiles constantly. For some reason, they could not accept that people could come into the church, they could be servants and followers of the true God, and that they could be the followers of the Lord, the Messiah. First of all, they couldn't believe he was the Messiah. You know, the Messiah to a Jew in the first century, to have a man on the cross being punished by the Romans, dying up there, weak, his life source draining from him up on the cross. That can't be a Messiah. Messiah was somebody coming in with power. He's going to be the king over the kingdom. He's going to be able to put down all these other people. Now, they couldn't accept that. So the circumcision gave him a lot of troubles. He says, empty talkers, deceivers, especially those of the circumcision, who must be silenced because they are upsetting whole families, teaching things they should not teach for the sake of sordid gain. Now, there are people taught. I talked to one man who loved, he was one of the prime movers and shakers of a thing called the One God conferences and all that. And he wrote a book, you know, with another man called Christianity's, Fatal Wound or something. And he against Jesus being divine or God, he was against that. But he told me, I said, wow, you go everywhere to preaching. He said, I'm backed by some very strong backers. They're paying him to get out and preach this kind of thing in the churches and around the world. All right, so he's got to be able, he's not addicted to wine. He has to be able to be teaching good, sound doctrine. The next thing from 1 Timothy chapter 3 is not pugnacious. That's the way the New American Standard puts it. Not pugnacious. It means not a striker, not a bully, not people. As one, I'm going to read you way different translations have it. Not a striker, not a bully, not pushing people around, not violent. He can't be a violent person. He's got to be patient. He can't be a pugnacious person or a bully. And it's a list of qualities relating to the superintendent. He's the bishop. He can't be a bully. He can't be a person who pushes people around. So he has to be proper. Listen to Titus again. For the overseer must be above reproach as God's steward, not soft-willed, not quick-tempered, not addicted to wine, not pugnacious. He can't be a person that wants to fight you all the time. He wants to do violence. That can't be. He can't be that person and represent the church. He has to be not quick-tempered. He can't be given to this violent streak. But in contrast, notice the next one in 1 Timothy 3, not violent, not pugnacious, but gentle. Okay? The Greek word gentle, meaning not insisting on every right of the letter of the law or custom. Okay? Gentle. The Greek word is epieikeis. That's the Greek word, but it doesn't matter. It just means gentle, not insisting on every right of the letter. I want this, I want that, or the law or custom, but rather yielding. Sometimes, okay, well, maybe you could have a gentle, kind. Courteous is another word that could be there. He's courteous. And even more important is tolerant. He's tolerant. He's not intolerant right away. He's tolerant of these things, gentle, tolerant. You'll see it in Titus chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. And this is for the average church member now. This is not just for the episcopos or the leading elder. This is for the average church member. Remind them to be subject to rulers. I'm reading from Titus chapter 3, verse 1. Remind them to be subject to rulers, to authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good deed, to malign no one, to be peaceable, gentle, that's the same Greek word, showing every consideration for all men, for all people. It's considerate. Every consideration, gentle. That's the episcopos is supposed to be there, but every church member should have that quality. Gentle. Okay? It's in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 18 where he exhorts. Listen to Peter's exhortation. 1 Peter 2, verse 18. Servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also those who are unreasonable. You can have unreasonable masters back then. Now, slavery was not the same kind of slavery we had in the United States. Slavery back in that time was you were a slave when you couldn't pay your debts or when you committed a crime. When you committed a crime and you had to pay off somebody, they didn't just let you get away with stealing something, then you go to jail. No, you pay this guy back, you go to work for him, you're his servant, you're his slave until you pay it off. James chapter 3, listen to James chapter 3, verse 17. So the word gentle here, not insisting on every right, being tolerant and kind and courteous and yielding. Now, James chapter 3 and verse 17, but the wisdom from above. Okay, he has two wisdoms. One is the earthly wisdom, and the other is the heavenly wisdom. The wisdom from above is pure, then peaceable, gentle, yielding, tolerant, courteous, reasonable. reasonable. Do you ever see have people who are unreasonable? You can't talk to them because they're not subject to reasonableness. They can't understand it. You know, in law, there's the person that you talk about. He's called the reasonable man. When judges make decisions, they often say, what would the reasonable man do in this case? Reasonable. You got to think it through. Can't be filled with contradictions and doing something that is just off the wall, that's going to cause more trouble. You make a decision that causes more trouble than you already started with. He has to be reasonable. So James chapter 3, verse 15, the wisdom from above is gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering and without hypocrisy. In other words, you're not pretending. It's not a show. Here it is in Philippians chapter 4. Paul is exhorting the people at Philippi. Listen to verse chapter 4 and verse 5. I'm going to read this from the New English Bible. Let everyone see your gentleness. The Lord is near. Let everyone see your gentleness. Now here's Philippians chapter 4, verse 5, again in the McDonald idiomatic translation. It goes like this. Let your unflappable reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. Unflappable reasonableness, and that's they have what they put for gentle. Let everyone see your tolerance, courtesy, yielding, you know, that you're not just insisting and arguing, and you want your way, and I want your way. You're tolerant and courteous and kind. Let everyone see that. All Christians, this is an exhortation for the churches. Can you say everyone can see that I'm reasonable and I'm very gentle, I'm yielding, I'm courteous, I'm tolerant, I'm patient? Can they see that in you? That's a good thing. And people see that in you. That and yet you're not weak, unflappable. You're not weak. You're strong, but you're reasonable and you're kind and you're yielding. And you don't always insist, I have to have my way, I have to have my way, I have to have my way, right to the last penny. I want that, you know, and the last letter of the law. You got to do it, absolutely. Gentle. The next thing is amachos. And that means, and that's the Greek word. This is this is 1 Timothy chapter 3. The very next one is abstaining from fighting, uncontentious. I think it says, and not a brawler, King James, and not a brawler. He's not a brawler. He's not, wants to fight right away. Again, you notice how many things avoiding fighting. Titus chapter 3 and verse 2 says, To slander no one. I'm reading this from the the Christian Standard Bible, from Titus chapter 3, verse 2. Here's how they translate it from the Christian Standard. To slander no one, to avoid fighting. Avoid fighting. That's the Greek word here, not a brawler. He's uncontentious. He's not trying to contend with people. He's not a brawler. He's not fighting. So in place of, if you're not a brawler, then you tend to be a peaceful person, right? I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight. I want to have peace. I want to be reasonable. I want to have gentleness. That's another quality. These qualities come in like a whole bunch of things that form a pattern of character. They slide over to one another. You'll notice that if you're gentle, but you're not a brawler, you're not a striker, you don't want a pugnation, you don't want to fight, and you're tolerant, and you've got patience and all that. All these kind of come into a certain kind of character trait, a way that you behave in front of people. These things are all mixed into one nice package And that's what the Episcopos has, but many church members have to, and the church members have to have these qualities. Paul wrote that. Listen to Titus chapter 3, and I'm going to read from the Christian Standard Bible. To slander no one, to avoid fighting, and to be kind, always showing gentleness to all people. Now, we just saw gentle was the other thing, but you can't be a striker, a fighter, but to be gentle, not pugnacious, but gentle. Okay? So he's going to show gentleness, be peaceable. Let me read that in the New American Standard, in Titus 3, verse 2. To malign no one, to be peaceable, gentle. Peaceable, in other words, I'm abstaining from fighting. I don't want to fight. I want peaceful. Now, a lot of people think if you don't fight, you're a wimp. But it takes a lot of strong character, not a strong character. What did King David say? I'm for peace, but when I speak, they're for war. Now, King David is not a person you want to go to war with, though. He wants peace. He always wanted peace. He didn't want war. But when I speak, therefore, they want to fight. Now, you don't want to be a person that can't defend yourself, that's for sure. But you don't want to be a fighter. You don't want to be a fighter, but you want to be able to defend yourself, as an individual. Titus chapter 3, verse 2. I'm reading this from the McDonald Idiomatic Translation. Insult no one. Be non-belligerent. That's how they translate that. Be non-belligerent, be forbearing, demonstrating full courtesy toward all humanity. Full courtesy. Here it is from the New Jerusalem Bible, Titus 3 and verse 2. Not to go slandering other people, but to be peaceable and gentle. You notice those two things go hand in hand here. And always polite to people of all kinds. Always polite. Are you polite? Polite to people of all kinds. You're gentle. Peaceable. Doesn't mean you're weak. You can be very strong, I'll tell you the combination that is one of the best examples, period. It has a true impact. That is a very strong, muscular man who is very gentle. He's maybe athletic, he's power, but he's very gentle. He's very tender. And boy, when you see that, you just admire that. That is so, he doesn't have to be gentle because he has the power to be other, but he's gentle. And that's the way King David, I believe, was. He was a gentle person. He was not a brawler, not trying to fight everybody. He didn't want to fight except to defend Israel and to defend his people. Now, the next quality that the Episcopos has and other ministers, and all of us have to have this, all of us, free from the love of money, okay? Free from the love, without love of money. That's the Greek word is aphileargyros. In other words, he's not loving money, not loving money. That came free from the love of money, as it's translated in the New American Standard Version in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 3. But the same quality is recommended for all church members in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5. Make sure that your character, this is what Paul wrote to the people there, make sure that your character is free from the love of money. Being content with what you have, for he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. That's Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5 in the New American Standard Version. Free from the love of money. The noun appears beside other character traits as a mark of an exceptionally fine person. And when the Art and Gingrich people, the Bauer lexicon is translated into from German into English by two people who translated, last names are Arndt and Gingrich. They translated that. When the Bauer lexicon went out to look how that word was used, how that used free from the love of money, they found that noun appears beside other character traits when you're talking about so-and-so, the character traits are always the mark of an exceptionally fine person. They're free from the love of money. They're not stingy. They're not grasping, and they're not worried about every cent. They're free from the love of money. They may be very generous and kind and caring and giving. Okay. Let's take a look at 1 Timothy chapter 3 again, verses 4 and 5. Now we come to another area, and it's very important. I want you to follow me with this if you can. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 4 and 5. This is what the Episcopos must do. He must be one. This I'm reading verses 4 and 5 because it takes both of these verses. He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. Not smacking them. You're not out there with a paddle and whipping them in front of the whole people and keeping them under control with all dignity, in a way that's dignified, okay? But if a man, now verse 5, but if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? That's how Paul puts it in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 4 and 5. Now, first of all, let's take a look at the word manage. Manages. From the Art and Gingrich lexicon, that Greek word means to exercise a position of leadership. A position of leadership. To direct, to be at the head. He's directing. At the head of things, giving directions. Okay, and the word can be translated rule, but it's not rule like you're a dictator. Not that. To exercise a position of leadership. Okay, he has to be one who exercises leadership and be at the head of his family, okay? You see that in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 4. He must be one who manages his own household. He directs it. He leads it, and his whole household. That's the Episcopos. Now, let me read you Romans chapter 12 and verse 8. Romans chapter 12, verse 8 has to do with the gifts that people get, all in Romans 12. Well, here's one of the gifts. So now he's talking about the various gifts, and he's talking about how you use them. So he says, or he who exhorts in his exhortation. In other words, if you're good exhorting, I want you to keep going for the exhortation. He who gives with liberality. He who leads. Here are the same word as manages, the same Greek word as manages in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 4, he must manage his own house. He who leads or manages, he has to do it with diligence. He who shows mercy with cheerfulness. So you have all of these qualities. He's got to lead. He's got to direct. He's got to help his family. He manages his family well. Okay. Now, if he doesn't manage his family well, Paul says, well, how can he, the next word, take care of? That Greek word means to take care of, to take care of. And that same Greek word is used in Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10 tells the story. Jesus tells the parable of the Good Samaritan. Right? The Good Samaritan. What did the Good Samaritan do? He comes along the road and he sees a man beat up, robbed by robbers, and he was left. Now, the Levite passes him, the priest passes him, but the Samaritan has compassion. He sees a man who's a Jew, not a Samaritan. He sees him, but he's a human being, and he's suffering, and you have compassion for a human being. So I'm going to read from the rest of that parable, Luke chapter 10, verse 34, okay? And he came to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil. Now that's olive oil and wine. Oil is also a disinfectant, and wine is a germ killer, okay, disinfectant. On the wounds, he poured oil in and wine in, and he put him on his own beast, picked him up, put him on his own donkey or his own beast, and brought him to an inn, brought him up, walked back up the hill. He's walking, as the guy is on his beast, you know, him, but holding on, and you just hold on here, you know, you can't walk, you've been beaten up. And listen to the next part of verse 34, and took care of him, took care of him. So how does the Episcopos, if he can't manage his own household, how can he, what is a minister supposed to do? Take care of the people. Take care of the brethren. How can he take care of the church of God? So this man brought him up and took care of him. That's verse 34. That's chapter 10 of Luke, verse 34. Now chapter 10 of Luke and verse 35. On the next day, now he went in the room, he took him to the inn, and he stayed with him and took care of him. What does that mean, take care of him? Make him comfortable? Are you okay? Are you comfortable? Are you hurting here? Let me bandage this up. Let me take care of this. Let me take this wound. You're getting infection here. Let me take care of this for you. You know, let me get you some food. You need some soup. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to make sure you're okay. I'm going to take care of you. Take care of him. On the next day, he took out now after he spent the night there taking care of him, verse 35, on the next day he took out 2 denarii, that is 2 days' wages, and gave them to the innkeeper. Hey, I'm renting the room from you, but listen here, take this money, and said, take care of him. Same Greek word, take care of him. All right? And whatever more you spend in taking care of him, you got to buy him some clothing. He needs new clothing. He needs new bandages. He needs more wine, more oil, whatever. Whatever you spend, when I return, I'll repay you. And of course, Jesus at the end of that parable said, who do you think was the friend to the man who fell among the thieves? Of course, his friend, you know, you shall love your neighbor. Who's the neighbor? Who's the neighbor to him? Your neighbor as yourself. Take care of him. Think about that. He's supposed to be taking care of. Now, you're an Episcopos. You have one wife, maybe, and you could be not married, but you don't have more than one wife. You have one wife that you take care of. You have children that you lead and have them act with dignity and properly. Your kids are not rowdy. They're not causing. They're not stealing from things. They're not breaking things. They're not vandals. They're not tearing up the church building or anything like that. You have them directed in a dignified way. You have done this. Why? You're taking care. You take care of your family. So, you know, being the husband doesn't mean I get all the privileges. I get to make all the decisions. I get to watch what I want on TV. You, tough luck for you. You don't get to. I get to have what I want for dinner. Tough luck. You don't get. He takes care. The husband has to take care of his family. Takes care of his wife. Besides, you know, in a marriage, each one takes care of the other, you know. You take care of me, I take care of you. You know, that's what you do in a loving relationship. You know, each person takes care of. And you'll find that your kids, as you take care of them, they'll start taking care of you. Not that you need it all the time, but, you know, they want to care. They learn taking care of. That's important. It's an important thing to be taking care of. All right? So if he can't take care of his own family, how is he going to take care of the church of God? Okay. And so that's the word. And that's very defined. Now in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 6 and 7, now we have this, verse 6, and not a new convert. He can't be a neophyte. The Greek word is neo. Okay, he can't be a neo convert. He can't be new, so that he will not become conceited and fall into the condemnation incurred by the devil. I think the condemnation given out by the devil, but he can't be conceited. The Greek word means puffed up. When you're conceited and you're puffed up and blinded, you become, you know, you become foolish. Think about it. I'm so great. I can do everything. I'm conceited. I've got this position. I'm really great. I'm so smart. I have everything. So now what happens? Because you don't recognize, you know, there's an old statement. If you could buy him for what he's worth and sell him for what he thinks he's worth, you could make a lot of money. Because a lot of people overestimate themselves. They overthink they're so much better than they actually are, that they're so great beyond where they really are. They don't know that they're not that great, okay? One of the things we all have to do, brethren, is to assess ourselves, you know, properly. Assess what you can do, what you're good at, and what you're not good at. We used to have people, there were the minister, because he was the minister, he thought he was good at everything. I'm good at this. I know how to build houses. I know what you should be doing here. I know how to run the softball team, the volleyball team. I'm good at everything. I know everything because why? I've got authority. Absolutely stupid, ridiculous. Nobody knows everything about everything. Fact of us, most of us don't know everything about anything. We're still learning. I don't know everything about the Bible. I'm still learning. I don't know it. I'm still studying. I want to learn it. I want to learn more and more. So not a new convert, unless he becomes conceited. He gets puffed up and he can't think straight and he becomes blinded and foolish. He makes foolish decisions because he thinks all he has to do because he's got this new position. So Paul wrote, not a new convert. And then verse 7, he must have a good reputation. Now he's talking about the episcopos again, with those outside. Notice how many times a good reputation is important. He must have, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 7, a good reputation to those outside. That means outside the church. So that he will not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. The snare of the devil. The devil fell into a snare, and maybe he will not fall into the snare that the devil has for him. He's going to trap you. The devil is out to trap us. And if you do stupid stuff and you have a bad reputation and you're looked on from the outside as no good, that's not good. Not good for the church of God. So when you put all these things together, what kind of a person is the minister supposed to be? The episcopos, mainly because he's the leading minister and sets the example, the minister of the gospel has to be a sort of a finished gentleman in his manners. You know, he doesn't have to make an excuse for his religion. He is adaptable. He usually conveys a sort of gentleness, intelligence. He's got to be smart because he's got to be able to teach. You can't teach if you don't know anything, right? You got to be smart. You got to be learning. And so he has to be kind. He has to be gentle. He's not quick-tempered. He doesn't fly off the handle. You know what the Proverbs say? The person of quick temper, you know, that's bad news. And they make foolish decisions and they do wrong things and make bad decisions and regret when they're quick-tempered. You don't want to be quick-tempered. You want to be patient and gentle and kind. You want to be a tolerant. You want to be have a good reputation. You can't be given to wine. You can't be addicted to anything that's not good. You can't be addicted to drugs or cigarettes or anything that's not good. You don't want any addictions. You have to be able to have self-control over you, that you can't be addicted to anything, either food, sweets, this or that, or anything. Okay? And you become a person of gentleness and a person who exhibits the kind of personality and care for people that people want. They want to be like you. They want to follow you. They want to do what you do. They want to live and believe what you believe. You want to be a representation of the church. When you put all these things together, and a person who cares for people, who cares for them, wants to help them do better in their lives, care. If he doesn't know how to rule, that is manage, when the word rule does not mean let's rule like that with a rod. It means to lead them. You don't know how to lead people. You know, there are leadership manuals. I had a wonderful manual. I don't know what happened to that book. It was called the Navy's Leadership Manual. Boy, did that have so many good qualities in it of leadership in the Navy. And that's way back, for written way, way back. Probably I've had it for probably 40, at least 40 some years. So 40 years ago. So you want to be a person that's leading and taking care of. Otherwise, how are you going to take care of the church of God and God's people? You're like a shepherd. Jesus was like a shepherd. How does Jesus take us? And he doesn't hit us with a rod of iron. He leads us. Aren't we glad we have a pastor, a servant, that he's the great shepherd of our and the guardian of our souls? He's watching over our beings. And we can't wait to hear his voice at that great time of the resurrection. Now join me as we close today with prayer. And I thank you for watching and tuning in. And I hope you've learned something. I also hope that it's been inspiring for you. So let's join in prayer and thank God. Father in heaven, we know you hear the and you're attended to the prayers of your people. They waft up before your great throne like the incense that was wafted through the great curtain that separated to the Holy of Holies. But we now can come right into your throne, into the holy room, into the Holy of Holies before you through Jesus, our high priest, who interprets our prayers, who interprets what we want to say, who knows in our hearts what we want and can make it plain to you. We give you thanks now. We pray for those like Don, like Linda, like Shirley Case, others, Father. We ask that you continue to be with them. And if we missed anyone, we just want you to know that we have them in our hearts, and we want everyone to improve and strengthen and have the faith and the strength to face whatever trials we have to face in this life. Thank you for your mercies every day. Thank you for your forgivenesses. Thank you for being so gentle and caring for us, because you do care for us, even though you lead us gently and strongly. And we know that we're supposed to follow you, and we do. We want to do it willingly. We give you thanks, blessings, and honor in your name, and in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, now and forevermore. Amen.